Welcome to KUOW's Speakers Forum. I'm your host, John O'Brien. In this extra episode, do you make it to many poetry readings? Perhaps you'll recall a moment when you were stopped in your tracks with words and visions of what these lives we live are all about. We caught a great reading recently presented by Folio, the Seattle Athenaeum. It featured three renowned Northwest poets, Heather McHugh, Lucia Perillo, and Washington Poet Laureate Todd Marshall. What's an Athenaeum? Listen in, all will be revealed. In this excerpt, we're presenting a selection of readings by the three poets. If you'd like to just hear the full event, go to our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. This Poets 3 reading took place on April 29th at Folio in downtown Seattle. In order of appearance, you'll hear poems read by Todd Marshall, Heather McHugh, and Lucia Perillo. Please note, the readings include themes and language of an adult nature. Thanks to Bree Ripley for our recording.
I'm just going to read a few poems and then turn things over to our other readers. So, to get us going. Loam. Love is peasant. Love is find. It lends me. It is unlike toast. It is prow. It is ride, not self-seating. It is easy language. It keeps sandy loam close. Love does not spite, but rejoices chartreuse, celebrates brindle, cheers wildflower bloom. Love always process, always trout, always whistle and flute, always, always very dear. Three remain, grain, hap, and love. And the greatest of these, my brothers and sisters, is love. Always peasant, always prow, always sandy loam, and always, always near. Origins. I suppose New York is the city where everything starts, not Chicago or Portland, Oregon, although in reality I only said that to repeat the or sound. Boring hordes are lords of the fork, a storied matador gored at 5 in the afternoon. How does elegy become a commodity? Unaffordable gas, gloomy conflicts abroad, and yet it all comes down to childhood. Mommy, daddy, horribly oppressive hours at age 4, when no one juggled for you, when the contorted shadows flexed into dread that you were alone, that you would always be alone, alone at the organic farmer's market, at the doubleheader against the Orioles, alone at the Apple Store, Victoria's Secret alone, and worse. Horn to the gut of boredom alone, goodbye baseball alone, high-five the guy on the bleacher seat and still bored alone, bored at the firstborn alone, mortgages boring, the long portage so boring, bored saying Lorca, thinking Lorca, Lorca alone in that glittering city among childhood and all the dead of the earth. Love poem, including the news. I have 6 gigs. Apparently, this is not a lot. Let me try to make them last. I'd use a gig to stop the bleeding, one to keep the house cozy. One gig would go to world peace, one to making sure that we have accurate yet culturally sensitive translations of ancient Greek. My most precious gig would be folded into a swan, origami graceful as emerging pansies in spring. I'd give you my last gig, my very last gig, but there are a few rules. No downloads allowed in the flower bed. They crowd the blossoms, purple and apologetic. I'm old-fashioned. I think it's best when they learn to grow in rows. The scandal about hacking data, that was the day the birds stopped tweeting, didn't jug-jug. Something ripped out their throats, and they just gave up. Folded wings beneath their bodies and never made a song again.
You know, I found when I was trying to put together a few poems for tonight, because I don't read in Seattle very often, and you know, so I think about it. Other places you can wing, here you really have to thigh. And what couldn't help rushing into my mind were the my two main preoccupations right now. One is a perennial one, which is a kind of obsession about animal life. And by animal life, I mean the animals we routinely consider ourselves not to be taxonomically related to, erroneously and routinely consider. So beasts, as they say, critters. So you'll see those, my heroes, cropping up throughout. The other, of course, is imposed on me by the moment within the era, which is to say an obsession with human beasts in politics. And since, too, I've recently retired from teaching after really doing it so much of my life, since I was 22, you know, over 40 years I taught one way or another. And I can't help loving lately the degree to which really wonderful and crazed thinkers throughout time reminded us what the real aims of education are. First of all, I love that etymologically it's that you draw something out, not that you're filling up a glass. And someone like Santayana, when he says that the aim of education is the condition of a suspended judgment on everything, seems to me really useful right now in an era, an age of raging opinion taken for belief, for faith. So I have one of the poems I really wanted to start with early was Named for Doubt. Of course, I don't have it up front, and I really hate when people do this. And self-hate, however lovely it is boring. Articles of Doubt. I wrote the A, then X'd it out. I'd 24 more characters to doubt. I traced them black, erased them red. By then I was undone by Z. The numbers followed one by one, and two by four, and more by 93. I numbered every being I'd begun till numbers wanted numbing rights to me. Perhaps there were no more of anyone, no group to grab, no game to name, no times to table, and no saming, only oddities. I saw remark's own mark was a duplicity, and zero owed its all to one. When we fell silent, it was quotably. Now none was insignificant. I wrote a thee. You know, the dictionary never has a little shelf under it. Even identity politics, it seems to me, is based on a taxonomic prejudice. I'm just mostly relieved when I feel it's true that I live in a country that tolerates oddballs. That's what I most love about a good democracy. Not which parties, which partisans it lets survive, but which oddballs. This poem's called Whole Times, and it's a kind of aleatoric text, that is to say, in my locution, a text that was generated from caregiver testimonies, which I was receiving a lot because I was sorting through them when Caregifted started. We give week-long getaways to people who have given more than 10 years of their lives to full-time caregiving for somebody who can't walk, talk, or feed himself. And we take them off to Victoria and treat them like royalty for a week, just the caregiver on a week they have off. And it's been the revelation of my later life, I must say, and my later life is my better life. I actually improved over time, and I gotta say, time improved over me. and also you think chance can't possibly distill, and you think programs, you know, whatever you think of computers or electronics or generated things you think programs cannot reveal, but that all those prejudices are not true. All prejudices are not true, understood most in the most beautiful way. This is not the most beautiful evidence of that understanding, but it's one of them. And it's called Whole Times. What I did was take every, of their application statements, I took each umpteenth word based on the number of letters in their last names. So it was every fifth word if your name had five letters, so on and so forth. And then I just strung them together, and it was remarkably telling of the larger story, and in some ways useful in understanding how you teach poetry too, that so much language isn't needed. You know, there's a reason you want less of it. There's a reason you become a poet, is you love the white space. And out of it still comes, if you just do a filter to see what your preoccupations are, it's amazing how often what will come out will be a sufficient testimony to your the patterns of your preoccupation. Whole times. Age 33, fine at forever baby trade. News didn't murmur. My beautiful girl be I, and she loves books. On November 4th came seven bumpy months storming in, now of the writing I had screaming. Years my girl was her feedings, years, suns, December bicycles, him falling at me, man side up, outside was alone, 12th hour to care for his night. Rare medications, numerous treatments, largely three, the youngest certified. I am that old round motion, cannot know trapped sense from well people. One old lymphoid, his language overwhelmed. How many? How survived? Each as our death night. Tell how, stranger, whole times where truth changing entire does four-piece noises.
Well, maybe I'll read Foley. Todd Marshall, I asked him how long we were supposed to read for, and he said, read, I don't know, how long do you want to read for? So I don't know if that's completely a good way to structure a poetry. Because poets love them, hear themselves talk, but this is called Foley. It is Harrison Ford who has just saved the world. But when he walks down a dirt road toward the ultra-large sun, what sounds like his boots are really bricks being drudged through a box full of coffee beans. And the mayor you've seen clopping along those 19th century cobbles, she's a coconut struck by a ball peen hammer. And the three girls riding in the hansom where the jouncing rustles their silk and bone, that's a toothbrush moving across birch bark. Even the moment when one kickboxer's perfect body makes contact with another kickboxer's perfect body has nothing to do with kickboxing or body. But the concrete colliding with the abstract of perfection, which molts into a leather belt spanking a side of beef. This is the problem with movies. Go to enough of them, and pretty soon the world starts sounding wrongly synced against itself. E.g., last night when I heard a noise below my bedroom window. that sounded like the yowl a cat would make if its tongue were being yanked backward out its ass. Oh, wait a minute. Backward out its ass. Okay, that's not okay. Backward out its ass, period. Pain, I thought. Help, I thought. So at 2 a.m., I went outside with a flashlight and found a she-cat corkscrewed to a tom. Both of them humped and quivering, were the beam flattened against the grass whose damp was already wicking through my slippers. Ah, love, I thought. Or some distantly analog feline cousin of love. Or the feline analog of the way love came out of the radio in certain 60s pop songs that had the singer keening antonyms. How can something so right feel so wrong? Something good feel so bad? You know what I'm talking about. And don't you think it's peculiar? In the first half of the 60s, they made the black girl groups sing with white accents. And in the second half of the 60s, they made the white girl groups sing with black accents, which proves that what you hear is always a strange alchemy of what somebody thinks you'll pay for and what you expect. Love in particular, it seems to me we've never properly nailed down. So we'll know it when we hear it coming, the way screaming fire means something to the world. I remember this guy who made noises against my neck that sounded like when, after much tugging on a jar lid, you stick a can opener under its lip. That little tsk. At first I thought this must be one of love's least common dialects, though later, when I found the blue spots all over, I realized it was malicious mischief. It was vandalism. It was damage. Everybody has a story about the chorus of these, love's faulty hermeneutics, the muffler in retreat, mistaken for the motor coming, the declaration of loathing construed as the minor reproach. How, babe, can I borrow $500? Gets dubbed over, goodbye, chump. Of course, and you slap your head, but it sounds funny. Not enough sizzle, not enough snap. If only Berlitz had cracked the translations, or we had conventions like the International Code of Semaphores, if only some equivalent of the Captain Midnight decoder ring had been muscled across the border. As it has for my friend who does phone sex, because it's a job that lets her keep at her typewriter all day, tapping out poems. Somehow she can work both sides of her brain simultaneously. The poem being what's really going on, and the sex being what sounds like it's going on. The only time she stops typing is when she pinches her cheek away from her gums, which is supposed to sound like oral sex, though she says it's less that it really sounds like oral sex than that these men have established a pact, a convention that permits them to believe it sounds like oral sex, when they know it's a woman pinching her cheek and not a blowjob. It's a telephone call and not a blowjob. It's a light beam whistling down a fiber, for God's sake, and not a blowjob. Most days I'm amazed we're not all schizophrenics, hearing voices that have been edited out of what calls to us from across the fourth wall. I've heard that in To Have and Have Not, Lauren Bacall's singing comes from the throat of a man. Also that Bart Simpson is really a middle-aged woman. And last week, not once but twice, I heard different women wailing in public parking lots, the full throttle of unrestrained grief. And both times I looked straight at them and pretended nothing unusual was going on, as though what I was hearing were only the sound of air shrieking through the spoiler of someone's Camaro. That's also part of the pact my friend's talking about, not to offer condolence, not to take note. You don't tell the men they're sorry creatures. You don't ask the women what went wrong. If you're being mugged or raped or even killed, you have to scream fire instead of hope, help to get someone to help you. Though soon, if not already, all the helpers will have caught on, and then you'll have to start screaming something else, like that you've spotted Bacall or Harrison Ford on the street. Bart Simpson even. No, wait a minute, he's not real. Though I remember a time when even the president talked about him as if he were human. It's not the sleaziness of phone sex I bristle at, but rather the way it assists the world in becoming imprecise about what is real and what is not, what is a blowjob, and what is only my friend jimmying her finger in her mouth or making a sucky noise against the back of her hand, which is oddly exactly how the professor of the ornithology class I took my junior year taught us to lure birds in, because birds would think these were the noise of other birds. And in that other life of mine, when bird watching was something I did for a living, I remember packing high into the mountains before the snow melted, when the trail couldn't be followed, so mine would be the only soul for miles. One reason I went up there was because at sundown, when the wind climbed the backs of the mountains, along with the spreading violet light, you could hear the distinct murmuring that the Indians said were the collective voices of the dead. And I'd lie there, just my sleeping bag and pad set down on snow. And I'd look hard at the sky as though the wind were something I could see if I looked hard enough, listening equally hard to convince myself about the voices of the dead, though always I was tugged back from true belief by the one side of my brain that insisted wind. And also I remember how once at the trailhead, a man popped out of his motorhome and pointed a camcorder at me, asking where I was going, what I was doing, though of course, alone, I wasn't going to say. But even as I turned away, I heard the whir of the movie being made and the man making up his own narration. "See this little girl, she says she's gonna climb a mountain." And briefly, I thought about pulling a Trotsky on him with my ice axe. But as the New Agers say, I let it go, and I left, and he didn't follow me, and nothing bad ever happened. Though from time to time, I think about strangers watching that movie in the man's living room, his voice overdubbing. See this little girl, she says she's gonna climb a mountain. The sound of me, of my boots walking. I should have introduced that by saying that Foley is what they call if you're a kind of person who reads film credits at the end, the Foley editor puts the sound in after they take the real sound out, which I always thought was very odd, that what we understand as the way things sound isn't really have anything to do at all with the way things really sound. Or at least may not.
That's it for this podcast extra from Speakers Forum. This Poets 3 reading took place on April 29th at Folio in downtown Seattle. You can hear the full version on our website, kuow.org/speakersforum. Thank you again to Bree Ripley for our recording. Tune in again soon for more from Speakers Forum. Mm-hmm.